Welcome back to Yeah, That's a Pepper Thing. First up, we've got Harrison wrapping his Dr. Pepper in a tiny quilt so it feels at home. Oh, how tender. That's a Pepper Thing! And over to Becca, who's whispering affirmations to her can.
You're sweet. You're unique. You're the best thing I ever poured over ice.
She swears it makes it taste better. It's not a science thing, but it's a Pepper Thing! Why do they all do it? All for that sweet, delicious, truly one-of-a-kind taste of Dr. Pepper. It's a Pepper Thing!
Oh, welcome along, welcome along. I tell you, I don't know what I'm doing, you know. I should be out in the sun eating Wibbly Wobbly Wonders or, I don't know, doing something else. But I have decided that something was so interesting that I kind of had to grab hold of it because I've been watching this young man on Twitter and socially commentating for quite some time. And as a gay man, his opinions kind of surprise me. Now, not that I believe, I'm not pigeonholing all gay men, by the way, into one little lefty category or anything like that. But his opinions kind of surprise me. Sean Atkinson is an Irish conservative, and it's unusual to have a conservative gay. Let's be clear about it, isn't it? I mean, I would imagine the majority of gay people, maybe I'm wrong in thinking this, are kind of liberal and progressive and left-wing in some way. But he's a great guy, and he has criticised gender ideology. He's also criticised our immigration policy, a lot of things that I criticise on a regular basis, you know, and also progressive politics in Ireland. And also, by the way, he's the co-founder of a group called Not All Gays, NAG, NAG. Which is a good name, isn't it? NAG. And he argues that LGBT people are not politically uniform and that many gay people hold conservative and gender critical views. He's also written for the European Conservative and many other things as well. And he joins me today. And how are you doing, Sean?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Nice to talk to you, Sean. Now, let's first of all get to you, because a lot of people who are listening may not know who exactly you are or what you are or what you stand for. And I suppose we kind of got to go back to a young age. When did you know you were gay? When did you first time you seen a bloke when you were 13 or 14 and the kind of hormones kicked in? You went, he's gorgeous.
I was actually very confused for a long time. I went to an LGBT youth group when I was about 16, but I didn't, the whole gender ideology aspect of that confused me even more. And it wasn't until I was 18 where I actually kind of figured out that I was gay. So.
Oh. Okay, so and what was the kind of general reaction to that, generally speaking? I mean, did you tell your parents that you were gay, and did your dad go, oh my God, I failed as a father? I mean, what was the general reaction of your parents when you told them you were gay?
I was actually quite offended because they didn't have a reaction. They were just like, yeah, okay. And I was like, where's my party, you know?
Like, yeah, where's me coming out party? Yeah, I'm coming out here. Yeah. There should be a big hoo-ha.
No money or at. Awful time.
Right, and were you quite openly gay then from that point on?
Yeah, I never really cared about it, to be honest. To me, it's always just been like, you know, having blue eyes. Kind of like you look at the movement now, it's all about, oh, we're gay, we wear the rainbow flag and everything. For me, I never cared even that much. So I was like, I just like fellas and that's the end of it, you know?
There was a thing I read here earlier on. I'm going to find it here, okay? Let me see. And I wanted to ask you about it, okay? Because obviously I wanted to look up and, you know, see a little bit about you and what have you, right? Now, this is probably completely untrue, so you can clarify if it is. In an article in Unheard, he described himself as formally identifying as non-binary before becoming critical of transgender ideology and activism. Why are you non-binary?
Yeah, when I went to the Belong to the U group, I mean, all of us were non-binary. We're all day dance. I changed my name and everything. It was just kind of... Like
what,
emo,
what was that,
you know?
About? What, yeah. Oh, so it was just to be cool, was it?
Yeah, pretty much.
So obviously, you believe that's some sort of social contagion that's going on at the moment, this kind of non-binary
business.
Yeah,
I think over the 2 years I went to that U group, I've seen it progressively get worse, where, you know, people that were identifying with these labels were, you know, very mentally unwell, or they had, you know, complex issues at home, and they were leaning very heavily onto the ideology to kind of get through it. And I just thought it was kind of a bit mad. And I was like, this isn't right. Something's...
I don't get the non-binary thing, like, because firstly, I don't even know what a man is, or I don't know what a woman is. I say that flippantly. In other words, I just know I'm a man. You know, I have a willy and everything else, and I just know I'm a man and I feel like a man. But if somebody said to me, what is a man or what does it feel like to be a man? I don't know. Sexual urges, testosterone. I don't know. I don't know what it feels like to be a man. I just know that I have the right type of chromosomes to be a man. And the same way when people say, oh, I feel like a woman, you're going to go, well, what does a woman feel like? You know, because it was a great article actually written by,
Bindle, I think.
No, this was a book actually, and it was written by a transgender woman who wants to be a man. So she went on male testosterone hormones, you know, high doses, obviously. And she wrote a book then saying she now understands what it feels like to be a man and have massive sexual urges that you have to control. And she said she couldn't control it, so went back to being a woman again and was quite happy to be a woman. So that's probably one of the main differences, is the sexual urges that we had to have to control because of this damn testosterone that we have lashing around our bodies all the time. But okay, so you're a conservative gay. Now, that's kind of unusual, isn't it, Sean?
Yeah, it is, but... I'd say my views aren't actually that conservative. It's just the issue is the left has gone so far one way that if you're still in the middle, you're seen as far right or conservative. Like a lot of my views would be very typically left wing. It's just I'm far right because I'm not a communist, basically.
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean, I voted yes to marriage equality. Now, I did vote no in the abortion referendum, but I voted yes to marriage equality. And yet I'm considered to be far right in some way. I don't know why people consider me far right. I consider myself centrist or maybe right of centre, but I'm not far right. Does that bother you, by the way, that kind of label that gets attached? I know you mentioned that in an article you wrote for the European Conservative in relation to the fuel protests, and you were talking about this kind of idea of sticking a label on people far right, because that wasn't your experience when you went to the protest.
Yeah, I found that, you know, far right is just like calling someone greer. I think it's just... a classist label that is doing more, it's more useful to them to dismiss, you know, what that side is saying. So they'll just say far right to kind of silence people. Then other people who don't really know what's going on are like, oh, they're far right, we need to avoid them. And it's a very powerful tactic, I think.
So it kind of creates a self-censorship, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you could say something completely moderate, like even about immigration, you could be concerned about, okay, there's a lot of immigration coming into the country, but you wouldn't say it because, you know, everyone's immediately going to hop on you and say you're a racist, you're far right even though that's not the case.
Yeah, well, I say it all the time, but in saying that, I do get called far right. Even when I ran for election, they called me the far right candidate. RTE labelled me as the far right candidate, which I don't believe I was for a minute. In relation to, I suppose, the fuel protest, we'll get to that because you wrote a piece for the European Conservative. And what you said was, I expected Ireland's fuel protest to be full of chaos, angry crowds, disruption, the kind of carry-on that would make it understandable for the government to rupture. But no, that wasn't it. What I found was something else entirely different. So what was it you found?
I got there and there was old people, young people dancing on the street, playing football on O'Connell Bridge. They were singing trad music and it was a very, very beautiful atmosphere. And, you know, I felt like a part of them, you know, and everyone was there supporting each other. The businesses coming out, you know, bringing food for them. It was so lovely. And the way the media represented it, there was one of the farmers had a tax issue 20 years ago. You know, they were bringing up all this stuff to kind of make everyone look bad.
Discredit.
Or right.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's what the media do, isn't it? If they think you're doing too well, they'll try and discredit you. And they'll grab stuff, as they did with me during the European election, tweets from like 12, 13 years ago and trying to make something out of them out of context. That's what they do. And exactly. do you find you're being silenced? Because I suppose you would be outspoken from the, and I'm going to say the LGBT community, but I don't think you attach yourself to that wagon. But do you find that they're even trying to silence you? Are you the kind of enemy of the LGBT community now?
I suppose I'd be made out that way. Like, it's very difficult. Like, you'd look at every national paper in the country, they will always have a gay man or a trans person write a piece or, you know, tell their side of the story to kind of paint us all as having the same belief. But you'll never see someone with my beliefs in the mainstream media unless they wanted to smear me. But they wouldn't actually hear out why so many gays are turning away from the LGBT movement and why we don't want anything to do with it and the damage it's actually doing and how it's kind of started going in reverse. You know, it's very regressive compared to what it's made out to be, this progressive movement, but it's just not the case.
And when you say, you know, a lot of them are kind of moving away from it or the damage it's doing, the LGBTQ plus alphabets after that, the damage it's doing to the community. I mean, you're talking about the LGB community rather than the whole lot, the damage it's doing to them, which you would have probably considered yourself part of at an earlier stage in your life. So what sort of damage do you think it's doing?
Well, it's doing a lot of damage when it comes to children. I mean, you look at even at the minute, there's the schools, the Educate Together schools, they've made the bathrooms gender neutral just so 0.1% of the population can feel a bit more comfortable. But then half the population becomes uncomfortable. Do young girls have to share a bathroom with boys? And it's just completely not fair. then you see the medicalization aspect to mostly gay kids. I think the CAS review found that 60 to 80% of children that were put on puberty blockers would grow up to be same-sex attracted. So, I mean, they're basically eradicating gays in a sense by trying to, it's just a modern conversion therapy.
I mean, yeah, you wrote a piece as well about, or when you kind of retweeted a piece about Helen Joyce, who said a fantastic article on the brave young women pushing back against gender ideology in the UK. The courage is contagious and more young people are beginning to find their voice because it, and you quote the article there that Helen Joyce had put up. Do you think people are fighting back? There are times when I think, you know, we're winning, when I say we're, the conservative movement, or the logical movement, the critical movement, I think maybe the pendulum is swinging back. But then there's other times that I think we're not. You know, when I see that Jack's being built in, you know, in Harold's Cross, you know, for the mixed sex Jacks, I kind of think, well, maybe we're not winning at all. Maybe, and you see the education system in Ireland and what's on the curriculum and all that kind of stuff. I think maybe we're losing. And Ireland always seems to be at the forefront of this kind of thing. We want to be the best boys in the class in Europe and be, you know, so progressive in this country. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, definitely. But I do think, especially in the last year and a half, there has been a huge surge in people that are, you know, awake to what's going on, especially in the LGBT movement, and they want nothing to do with it. Like when we first founded Not All Gays in 2023, there was 9 of us, and now I've got a group chat with over 40 Irish gays that are just sick of all this stuff, and it's just been building and building. It's well over in the UK, those, the Young Turfs. I met them last year, and it's just incredible how much they've come together, how much they're willing to fight. And just more and more of them are popping up out of nowhere, and they're fighting it in their university. So I do think the next few years are going to really change things.
I mean, you say, yeah, they're fighting back. And you mentioned there a few minutes ago in relation to, I was going to mention Pride. And you had something to say in relation to that as well. You said that, ah, brilliant. One whole month of corporations pretending to care about gays while activists explain why homosexuality is actually bigoted, right? And that kind of reminds me of a mate of mine years ago who was gay. And despise Pride Month. Absolutely. But actually, it wasn't Pride Month in those days. Going back about 20 years ago, it was Pride Day, right? And he despised it. He says, I don't want to be part of any street carnival where lads are walking around in leathers and all sorts of things. He kind of disassociated himself with that whole, that movement at the time, and Pride and everything else, the rainbow flag. He just didn't want to be part of it. Is that where you stand?
Yeah, definitely. I've been to 2 Pride parades in my whole life. One of them was when I was a teenager, and the other one was actually just kind of make a statement. We held up a Not All Gays banner during it to just say Not All Gays agree with this. But I think Pride has completely lost touch with itself, because it used to be, you know, about getting same-sex marriage rights and, you know, understanding for gays and acceptance. But now it's just, you see people walking down the street in a Speedo, and it's like pushing society's boundaries. And it's a lot of it is nonsensical. They care more about pronouns than they do the fact that it's illegal to be gay in 60 countries across the world. So
I've seen some of them actually in the NIP, by the way, in the United States. Like, they wouldn't even have the speedos on. They don't even bother going that far. They're walking around practically naked. And I just find it quite disturbing. Under no other circumstance would you allow naked people to walk down the street where there's children or anything like that. It just wouldn't be appropriate. But it seems to just, they turn a blind eye to it. Ah, sure, they're gay. It's grand. You know what I mean? It's Pride Month. They're allowed to do what they want. Two lads peeing. What was that one in Canada, was it? Two lads peeing on each other in a paddling pool in the middle of the streets.
You know what I mean? I think there's it's city in Canada somewhere, and like, every year they have like a week long gay festival, and it's just pure degeneracy where they do just pissing each other on the streets. It's absolutely disgusting. Like, I don't know why people are allowed to get away with that. If it was any other day of the year, if people were doing that, they'd be arrested, as they should be, you know.
And does that piss you off? Because as a gay man, you're kind of thinking to yourself, this is the kind of stereotype people are seeing, you know, when Pride happens. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, it's not all that, some decent people walking Pride too. But as a gay man, does that piss you off, that kind of stereotype then builds up from those images?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just that as well. Like, I mean, for, you know, the fight for gay rights, the fight for acceptance, a lot of it was, you know, proving that, oh, we just want to love each other, we want to live normal lives and, you know, keep to ourselves. And now it's completely gone backwards, where people are like taking advantage of that and kind of like, well, I can get away with this then. And plus another thing, during the fight for acceptance, you know, gays were seen as, oh, they're all paedophiles. So a huge part of that was fighting against that stereotype. But then you look over in the UK, Stephen Ireland, he was like the head of Surrey Pride, and he's doing time in prison now for raping so
that's
many
right.
boys.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
Of the safeguard, and it's just gone out the window. So
Yeah. I mean, there's been some horrific cases. I mean, there's one actually ongoing at the moment with those two guys who surrogated that child. That's going, it's in trial. So I don't want to talk about it too much, but it's on trial at the moment. Some of the things they've been accused of doing to that poor child is just incredible. And I'm not suggesting, by the way, it's only gay men do that. Of course, straight people abuse children too, or have abused children in the past. We've seen that here in Ireland with the Catholic Church and everything else. But it does draw attention again to a problem then, that this kind of stereotype exists. And I don't think the stereotype is going to go away as long as we continue labelling. Because I think I said to you when I was talking to you last week that I would like to see a world where you don't have to tell me you're gay. I don't want to know you. I don't want to know what you do in your bedroom. It's your own business what you do with your boyfriend in your bedroom. It's kind of irrelevant to me. No more than, you know, you don't introduce. Like, if you were interviewing me tomorrow, you would say, here's Niall Boylan, the heterosexual man. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not a label you want to attach to me. So I just see a world in the future where we don't have to use those kind of labels. Do you think that's ever going to happen?
Not with the way things are going, I don't. I really like that as well, where we just, you know, do what we're doing, get on with things. But
yeah,
the whole movement just seems to be all, I want special privileges because I'm attracted to the same sex. And even still, they don't even know what same-sex attraction is anymore, because they're trying to tell us that a man in a dress is a lesbian, or, you know, a woman who cuts her breasts off is a gay man. So
I get confused by that. So you got a bloke in a dress who's attracted to women, and I'm going, okay, so is he heterosexual or gay? So he's clearly gay. Oh, no, he's not. He's heterosexual, but pretending to be a lesbian. And I just get completely confused by it. By the way, I'm assuming you believe that men can't become women.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely not.
Yeah. So
I'm a complete turf.
Yeah. So I assume I am too. So what do you think is happening in the world where this acceptance of quite ugly men, generally speaking, you know, walking around in badly fitted female clothes and wigs on them, which I believe is just a sexual fetish. Why do you think it's been so... and by the way, it's women who are mainly accepting it, not men. Most lads I know would turn around and say, Egypt. But most, it's women are like, oh yes, we should stand up for his rights and or her rights and all this kind of... It's kind of women. Why do you think this is happening? Why do you think we're so delusional when it comes to this thing?
I think it's because anyone who criticizes the LGBT movement is immediately a transphobe, a homophobe. So when something becomes uncriticizable, people take advantage of it. So you can see all these men with fetishes kind of like, oh, well, this trans thing exists, let me swoop in there as well. Because there are people with gender dysphoria who do suffer from it. Now, I still don't think any man, no matter if he's gender dysphoric or not, should ever be allowed in the women's space. It's kind of like, that's his thing that he needs to cope with. It's not, women shouldn't have to actually be there to comfort them with that, you know what I mean? It's not their responsibility. Women fought for their spaces. But I think a lot of people are still taking advantage of it, and it becomes uncriticizable. Like, you look at Helen Joyce, Julie Bindle, J.K. Rowling, they frequently receive death threats just for defending the rights of women, and I think that's unacceptable.
I mean, I know what you say about J.K. Rowling, whatever about Julie Bindle and the rest of them, but the only thing I will say is, I'm a big fan of a lot of the stuff that she's written, right? And I was talking to my wife about this the other night, and I said, if I was a multi-billionaire, would I be on Twitter all day having a go at transgender people? I mean, and don't get me wrong, you know, I don't believe there's such thing as transgender. I don't believe you can change your gender. I believe that people believe you can change your gender, but I don't believe you can. But to spend all her day, you know, with the money she has, that she can do whatever she wants, do you think it's become a bit of an obsession with her?
No, not at all. I think she really understands that she's in a position where she's not going to lose out from speaking out. Sure, she suffers, and I'm sure she's making less money because of it, but she's speaking out.
She's making $7 billion instead of $8 billion, or I don't know.
So. Yeah, you know, but still, but she's speaking out because the single mother at home with two kids to feed can't say anything about it. And even I remember what really got me into the whole political commentary was, I was sitting at a table with my gay friends, and this was right after J.K. Rowling tweeted about it for the first time, and I was like, finally someone is saying what I'm thinking and I'm not actually mental. So I said that to them, and there was just chaos then. I was evil, I was a bigot, I was all these things, but I was delighted when she said something, because I knew
somebody with a platform is actually saying it, the same one I said. Yeah, now they might listen. Yeah, but I don't think people are listening. That's the problem. And you're saying that maybe the pendulum is swinging back. And I see that sometimes, maybe in the UK since the Supreme Court decision, but I don't see it here. And unfortunately, we live in Ireland, and, you know, we have a duty and a responsibility, you, me, and anybody else who has a bit of a platform, to keep speaking out. I don't agree with anybody being censored or shut up in any shape or form, but I don't think it's doing any good. I don't think they're listening. We see it all the time with the HSC using words like pregnant people. We see it with the government. We have God knows how many government ministers in there who have no idea what a woman is. And even if you ask them, they get terrified to even answer the question. I can't see that changing.
I can't for a while either. And I think obviously the issue is the media, like RTE, the Journal, the Indo, like, because they will not platform anyone with an alternative belief on any subject. It all has to follow the same NGO script that they've written, and everyone has to follow that belief. And if you step out of line there, you don't get any publicity or whatever. But most people, I think, would completely agree with us. They're just not hearing it, and they don't see how big the issue is, if you know what I mean.
And why, well, if most are agreeing with us, well, I agree with you. Maybe then we're kind of living in some sort of little echo chamber. I don't know. Maybe I'm in that echo chamber too. And if most people do actually agree with us, and anybody I speak to kind of agrees, well, then why are these companies, media outlets, still in business when they're constantly promoting that narrative, other narratives about immigration and stuff like that, that we'd be talking about on a regular basis, climate change, whatever it happens to be, when they promote just one side of a narrative, which is the left side? How do you think they're still in business if we're in the majority?
Because the state funding, our taxes are paying for it, you know? All of them are state funded, and the state is deciding.
Well, they're not all state funded. RTE, some of them, they're getting grants, they're getting advertising and all sorts of things, but yeah, obviously RTE is state funded, you know? I don't know whether that funding should stop, to be honest with you. I don't think we'd miss RTE if it was gone tomorrow. I certainly wouldn't miss it anyway. In relation to yourself, so where do you see, or what are you hoping for in the future? I mean, I know you set up, or you founded Not All Gays, but what's the kind of next step for you now?
Well, I've been working with the group Breaking Point for the last few months, just volunteering for them.
Okay.
So we host different conversations on, we did, our most recent event was on the fuel protests.
But that was in John McGurk that time, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just kind of about getting people talking, having different perspectives and, you know, not crying over different opinions. So I think it's a great crack, so I'm enjoying that for now. And I'm,
is that a bit of a spin on the, is a bit of a spin on the Turning Point thing? Is it that where the name came from, or something similar?
I don't think so, actually. I think they named it after, because I'm very new to it. I just volunteer here and there, but I think they just named it because it feels like Ireland's at a breaking point constantly with everything going on, the housing crisis, migration, HSE being absolutely terrible. So
do you worry about getting cancelled?
No, I used to, but I think when I was before I had a following or anything, I'd be talking about this with my friends, and I mean, they cancelled me for having the wrong opinion, and then I was completely alone. So now it's like, these are strangers on the internet. I don't really care what they
That feel at the time when your gay friends that you were talking about, that you spoke about after the JK Rowling tweet and everything else, when those kind of people who you trusted and spent a lot of time with and they knew all your thoughts and everything else, when you actually told them certain things about how you felt and they kind of turned their back on you? Was that
It was very sad at the time, but I mean, I'm still, like, I've no regrets, because I've met so many brilliant people who not just agree with me, but they are incredibly brave, like the young Turks that Helen Joyce wrote about. I wouldn't have met people like that if I hadn't have said that, and so I'm very inspired by a lot of the people that I've met through speaking now.
And where else, I know you're doing a couple of podcasts and bits and pieces at the moment. Where else have you got any plans to speak out? You're not going up to the Turning Point, or is there a Turning Point event, isn't there, next week or the week after in the UK, a big one? There's big events.
I haven't heard about it, actually.
Yeah, and what's the CPAC? Isn't it CPAC in the UK as well? Have you plans to try and get yourself talking at any of those big events?
I don't think I'd be good in front of a crowd. I'm a terrible public speaker. Oh, I'm terrible. I do be shaking.
You're not doing too bad here now at the moment. You're doing okay. Yeah. Do you think it manages? Why? What is it? Just standing up in front of people, you just fall apart, do you?
Yeah, and then I end up saying something absolutely mental, and I'm like, they all think I should be locked up now. But, so it's a lifelong issue. If I overcome it, I'd be delighted to speak or something. But
I mean, your tweets and the stuff that you write, you know, is written so articulately, and you can tell you believe everything you actually write. So you should be able to just get up there and say it. Surely that's just the same thing, isn't it? Because I think the movement, and particularly gay people, I think they need somebody like you, and they need people like you to say, you know, look, not all gays. And it's true, not all gays. I just spoke to Carl Dieter recently, and I was talking to him, and we were talking on air about, you know, LGB hitching their wagon to T, if you know what I mean. And they can't reckon that was the biggest mistake, you know, that gay people and lesbian people and bi people ever made, was kind of hanging on to the, or allowing the tea to be attached to it because it's done more damage to it.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that.
Mm. I mean, I don't think it's ever going to benefit because, look, at some point, you know, I think the tea part is probably going to vanish from it. I would imagine. I think this is definitely just a phase.
Sure. With Not All Gays, we joined LGB International, which was set up by LGB Alliance. And we've got, I mean, we went viral. I was on the news in China because we've got groups all over the world, all these LGB groups that are fighting back against the tea. And they're popping up everywhere now, even outside of the alliance that we have there. There's groups all across America with all different beliefs. Like, a lot of them could be conservative gays, a lot of them could be left wing, just gender critical. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think that's just going to grow over time. So I'd say eventually, I think the original groups like Stonewall or Shout Out, whatever, the ones that have added the tea, I think they're going to get less popular over time. And the ones that have dropped the tea will start growing.
But the problem we have here in Ireland is we're seeing huge popularity now of left-wing political parties. We saw that in the by-election, for example. And those left-wing political parties, like the Social Democrats, People Before Profit, and the rest of them, including Sinn Féin, by the way, they're quite positive towards transgenderism and even so much, even puberty blockers. So that tells me that Ireland is heading in the wrong direction instead of the right direction, which the UK is heading in the right direction, I believe. Because obviously the Supreme Court decided there's only two genders. America seems to be heading in the right direction because Donald Trump said there was only two genders. But here in Ireland, if we're to believe Regina Doherty, for example, there's nine genders, which is quite specific, by the way. Nine. I'd love to know what the nine was she was talking about. Not seven, not ten, but nine. So I just find that I'm worried that we're going to probably have a very left-leaning government in the next 5 or 6 years, and it's just going to get worse.
I think it's going to have to get worse before it gets better. We are very behind, though, compared to the rest of the world. And I think a big reason why we go more left is because the UK is kind of going more right and we kind of want to do something different to the UK. I think that's a huge mentality that our politics have, especially the likes of Sinn Féin.
Yeah, we're always the best boys in the class, aren't we, or something like that. That we like to be when it comes to Europe, anyway. In relation to immigration...
To be relevant.
Oh, yeah. In relation to immigration, you're quite critical of the Irish government's immigration policy. Where do you kind of stand on that? Because I know there's two trains of thought. This is the problem with the right wing in Ireland. They don't agree with each other. At least the left always, like, even if you said in the elections, left say vote left, vote left, vote left. But with the right wing, they're all on different planets. They're all in different sections. So they won't agree with each other. So when it comes to an election, you know, one right person will tell you don't vote for him because he's more right than I am. So where do you stand when it comes to immigration, when it comes to deportation, when it comes to asylum seekers? Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think in this country, we just don't have the facilities to handle the amount of immigration we have when it comes to legal immigration. I mean, the housing crisis is through the roof. And I think we need to really prioritise our own people being able to, you know, buy their own homes, move out. But with the amount of people coming into the country, it just gets more difficult.
And that's in relation to legitimate immigration through the visa process. You believe it's too easy to get in here?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, we have so many people coming in with sales degrees and things like that that are just absolutely useless. Like, it's one thing to, unfortunately, like, look, if this country had everything, I wouldn't really mind. Like, move in, explore the world, that's your business.
Yeah.
But it's the fact we don't have enough facilities for Irish people whatsoever.
Okay, so we should be limiting the amount of legitimate immigration into the country and try to keep our own workers here instead of letting them go off to Australia or whatever it happens to be, particularly in the healthcare industry. In relation to illegal immigration and asylum seeking, where do you stand on that?
I think they should all have to go. Like, it's the ridiculous. Whole lot. We're paying so much money for them, and a lot of them are coming from countries like, it's from Afghanistan, where, you know, women aren't allowed to speak or make a noise, where gays are killed. Why are we letting people like that into the country? And I know a lot of them are probably peaceful, they're probably escaping that, but still, how can we tell that one of them is and one of them isn't? So, and then there was a BBC...
And is there any room at all for, say, in your mind, for asylum seekers, say, coming from countries where there's a war, for example, you know, I don't know, be it Palestine or whatever it happens to be, or Somalia, or, I don't know, some of those other countries around the world, where there is actually wars. Do you believe there's any room for that at all? Or is that not our problem?
Asylum seekers, and I think, you know, they're obviously escaping something, and I feel for them, and I have a lot of empathy, but unfortunately, this country needs to prioritise Irish people, and it just isn't doing that. I think if we had our country sorted, I'd have no issue with it, especially when it comes to women and girls. I think, of course, we need to take them in, especially children. But then again, you look at the children coming into this country and they're going missing in Tuzla.
But half them aren't even children. Yeah, but half them aren't even children. They identify as children when they come in, but they find out later on that they're not actually children at all. So I saw a documentary there from the UK. Some lad coming from Nigeria into Heathrow Airport. He was about 35, and he was trying to claim he was 16 years of age, and he was a child abandoned. And in fairness to the customs officer, they were looking at him and they were going, they start asking, what year did you go to school? And he started making mistakes and everything. They said, you're not a child. He says, I am. And he got down on his knees, please help me, I'm only a child. So it turned out anyway, you know, the writing at the end as to what happened, they had to allow him to seek asylum as an unaccompanied minor because they couldn't prove that he was, like, he looked about 35 or 40. Like, he just wasn't 16. So they do lie. Yeah. So when they're coming in, I mean, there was a report in the Irish Times there during the week about the amount of people, and I think it was in Grip Media as well, who have come into this country as unaccompanied minors, who are not actually minors at all. They're all over the age of 20. And some of those are down as being missing from Tuzla, but they're actually not missing from Tuzla. They were just put into the care of Tuzla and then just walked out the door again because they weren't actually children. They were adults. So
yeah, you know, but then on the other side of that, there was the case of a 14-year-old girl who came into the country and within an hour she'd gone missing. Mm-hmm. And then a year later, she was found in a brothel. So wow. Our country, mm-hmm. Our politicians are saying, oh, we'll look after the children, that's fine. But really, we actually can't look after them. So, I mean, what kind of life is it to flee a war just to end up
in prostitution in Ireland?
Yeah.
Because it is, I mean, when you see these guys who are paying, you know, getting thousands to, you know, bring people over in dinghies across the channel, whatever it is, it's basically human trafficking. That's what they're doing. And they should be all arrested for it. But, okay, so as far as you're concerned, we need to clean up our act when it comes to immigration. So how do you propose doing it? This is always the problem. And I kind of agree with some of what you said. But how do you propose doing it? Because this is the argument we have on the show all the time. Like, okay, we all know what we need. We need to stop this kind of leaking bucket, you know, of immigration, people coming in, the majority coming into the UK, by the way, down to Northern Ireland. Very few are coming into the ports, to Dublin Airport or Rosslare or whatever it happens to be. So how do you stop that? Because the English are never, or the British, are never going to agree to, you know, check in for passports at Belfast International Airport or whatever it is, because that would go against the rights of a British person. So, and they don't want them anyway, so they're happy to see them go to Ireland. So how do you stop it?
I have absolutely no idea. I'm not going to lie to you. I wouldn't have a clue. But in an ideal world, we'd, you know, be able to take in people so long as our people are cared for. How to get there? No idea. You might as well ask me to cure cancer.
Well, I'm not going to ask you to do that. But yeah, because I just don't see an answer for it. Because I, as much as I agree with everybody out there about how we solve the or how we fix the problem, you know, it's a difficult problem to fix. Now, my theory on it is that we should have a detention centre. A very large detention centre that holds thousands of people. We should process people within a week. And if we need more staff to do that, well, then let's hire more staff to do that. There should be no appeal system. If you're told you have to go home, you have to go home, and that's the end of it. Currently, at the moment, by the way, there's thousands of people in the appeal system. There's 25,000 or something waiting for approval. There's another God knows how many tens of thousands waiting for an appeal. And then when they lose the appeal, they'll appeal again. And then they go to the judiciary system, to the High Court, if they fail again. So in other words, nobody ever gets sent home. There's God knows how many thousand deportation orders out there, and nobody actually leaves. Nobody's been checked. Now and again, the Minister of Justice might fill a plane with a few people and throw them home. So we don't really do anything about it. So the only way to do it is to discourage it. And to discourage it, you put people in a detention centre, you process them, and the very few that actually are allowed to stay because they genuinely are coming from a, you know, dangerous country where their lives are in danger, and you allow them, okay, you go out the door, get a life, there you go, get a job, off you go, look after yourself there. The rest of you is on a plane, you're going back to where you came from. Wherever you, we manage to find out where they came from, they go back. But that's the only way to deal with it. But the idea that we allow people to come in here, sign up at the iPass Centre in Mount Street, then they're given, you know, a few quid and, you know, a piece of paper with a name and an address on it for an iPass Centre to go and stay in, and they just wander the streets. I just find that the most bizarre thing in the world. It wouldn't happen in most countries in the world.
Yeah, it's absolutely mental. And the BBC did an undercover investigation into the asylum system over there, and they found that a lot of the people that were rejected for asylum were being helped by NGOs and law firms, basically being told by these people to lie and say that they were gay and fleeing because they were going to be killed for being gay. But these are actually straight people that were rejected because they're not real asylum seekers. So I wonder if that's happening in Ireland. I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever.
Yeah, how do you test? How do you test? I did see a sketch on that, by the way. How do you test if somebody's gay? If the guy says, yeah, well, I'm fleeing my country because, you know, they don't like gay people and I'm gay. Okay, kiss me so. I don't know. How do you check if somebody's actually gay? So it is like, it's like going to a doctor and saying you have a bad back. Nobody can actually prove that you haven't got a bad back. It's a bit of a bizarre. But the other one as well that's been abused now is climate change. So they're coming from countries where they're saying climate change is making them flee their country. And seemingly this is a legitimate reason now, according to the European Union, for asylum. Which is quite bizarre.
It's ridiculous. It rains too much in Ireland. Can I flee somewhere?
I know I'm going to flee to Florida because I'm pissed off at the weather here, apart from the last 3 days. Mind you, in the last 3 days, RTE couldn't help themselves the night before last. They went down and they blamed it all on climate change. 3 days of sunny weather and all of a sudden it's climate change. We're in trouble. The world is going to end. And George, what's his face? What's George's name? There's been on RTE and he did COVID and now he's doing climate change. He's like the Grim Reaper on RTE. Do you trust the media at all?
I mean, there's plenty of good journalists across, say, RTE, even though that, you know, investigate things, they report on crime accurately. Like, I have no reason to distrust them, but it's the ideological hold in a lot of it that I'd be distrustful of. Especially when they're pushing things like, you know, trans, and because trans is honestly the biggest joke that we've fallen for, you know, the LGBT movement. So they're falling for it, they're pushing it, even though all the evidence is showing that puberty blockers are bad, they're damaging, putting children on hormones causes loads of problems, it doesn't actually solve their issues.
The damage can be irreversible, we know that, yeah. And we're still doing it, by the way, you know, I know we're sending people to England, but we're still doing it. And there is no sign of puberty blockers being banned in this country, and they have been banned in many countries now.
Yeah, Sweden, the UK, a lot of them are pushing back on it because they're like, oh, we made a mistake here.
Mm-hmm.
And more detransitioners are speaking up. I know a few Irish ones as well that are hopefully going to be speaking up soon. So it's happening everywhere and people just, it's going to become unignorable.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot more detransitioners now. And, you know, and what I find deeply disturbing is organisations and doctors who would, without a second thought, you know, a 16-year-old girl comes in and wants her breasts removed and will surgically do it. I believe anybody who does that should be put in jail. I think it should be a criminal offence to actually do it. It'd be like me walking in saying, I want to identify as a one-legged man. Will you cut my other leg off? Like, there's no doctor in the world would do that. Well, I would hope there's no doctor in the world would do that. They would send me off to see a psychiatrist because clearly there's something wrong with me if I want my leg removed. What was that famous one in America where your woman wants to identify as a blind person? Do you remember that? Do you hear that one? So she goes into a doctor, wants to identify as a blind person and wanted to be blind. The doctor said, I'm not going to do that for you. I can't do that for you. She went home before bleach in her eyes.
I've seen that. And then there's Rachel Dole is all I think her name is. She's a white woman who was pretending to be black.
Oh, I remember her, yeah. Yeah, she said she was black from Africa. She wasn't at all. They spoke to her parents. She's as white as the driven snow.
So, yeah, blonde, blue eyes, everything. And she's there walking around with blackface teaching students. It's just mental.
Yeah. She was teaching students about white privilege. And she was white herself. And I mean, some of the most bizarre combinations. I seen one the other day who identified as trans, two-spirited, queer, something or other else as well. I went, how can you have so many titles on your name? Like, it's ridiculous. You know what I mean? What's even two-spirited mean? Like, I have no idea. And the latest thing, of course, the word queer has changed dramatically since I was a kid. Queer, when I was a kid, was a word that was used to describe gay men. That was just it. Somebody would say, oh, him, yeah, he's a bit queer. You know what I mean? That was a word that was used to describe it. You certainly wouldn't use it nowadays. It's just in a derogatory fashion. But it seems to have been adopted now by the LGBT movement, and the Q, obviously, is for queer, to mean you can be anything you want to be. Like, you can be a dog if you want to be. It's kind of bizarre, isn't it?
I think they were quite desperate to have, like, the equivalent of an N-word to reclaim and, you know, a word that they can use. But the people that have actually reclaimed that for gay people, most of them aren't gay. They're completely straight. They're just bored and have blue hair.
What is queer, Sean? I'm still confused. I'm 62, maybe. I'm a bit old for this carry on. But when somebody says now, you know, and I gotta go, are you gay? No, I'm queer. Hang on. What is actually queer mean now? What does it mean now?
Well, in reality, it's a political label. It's nothing got to do with sexuality. Like, there's gays and then there's queers, and queers are head cases. Like they have all, they're extremely woke, mad progressive. They speak over gay people, and most of them aren't actually gay themselves. I find them all
So is
very
that
irritating. Like,
the purple-haired ones? Is that
yeah,
them?
like if I went on a date with someone and he sat down and said he was queer, I'd be like, "Well, do you want a paracetamol?" And then I'd get up and leave. Like, I wouldn't be able for it.
But it must be difficult for you now, because there's more of those kind of people in your community, and I hate to use the word your community because you hate it, but there is more of those type of people. Or maybe I'm wrong, maybe there isn't, maybe a lot of them seem to be women, by the way, with purple hair and stuff like that. But so it must be difficult trying to weed it out when you're dating now. Are you dating steadily now at the moment, or are you kind of on and off?
No, not at the minute, but I found that it's most gay people I speak to agree with me on at least half the things. They just don't want to say it out loud, you know. But because they're afraid of the queers, the blue haired ones. So they're like, I don't want to get cancelled. But most of them actually agree. Very, very rarely will I meet a gay fella that is like, oh, you're evil, you're evil. But yeah.
I know a guy who's well known. I won't say who he is, but he's well known, and he's spoke up for the gay community for years and years and years. And I speak to him off the record on a regular basis because we're good friends. And he would tell me that he does not believe that a man can become a woman. He thinks it's ridiculous, they're delusional, all that kind of stuff. But yet he will speak publicly and say they can. And I said to him, why do you do that? And he said, because I'd be hated, he said, if I said what I actually believe. And I says, but that's nutty, that you're actually a spokesperson, so to speak, inverted commas, for a community, and yet you're quite willing to lie just to save your own bacon because you're afraid of what they might think of you. And I just, like, that's not what you did, obviously. You did something different. You spoke out. But is that the case all the time, that people are kind of afraid to say something?
Yeah, definitely. That's extremely common. Like a lot of them around our social circles will say, "Yeah, I agree with this. I agree with this," but they genuinely do not. Which I find very sad that people have to lie like that. I couldn't do it, especially now after, facing the brunt of being honest with my views. I just could not put the lid back
What's the
on.
worst thing, when you say face of the brunt, what was the worst thing that's happened to you so far?
I think getting cut off by people who knew me other than my beliefs, I think that was very hurtful. I mean, I've had like a lot of abuse online, but honestly, I find a lot of it funny. Someone said to me the other day that I looked like a malnourished lesbian, and I spat my coffee out laughing. So I do enjoy a lot of the abuse.
But you don't look like a malnourished lesbian. Mind you, I've been called worse than that, to be honest with you. I get great entertainment out of some of the names they call me online. And actually, during the European elections, it was hilariously funny, some of the things they said about me. Some of it was quite serious, by the way, completely all untrue. But I got a great entertainment out of it. You have to have a thick skin. Do you have a thick skin?
I think so, yeah. Like, I mean, if one of my friends or my ma criticised me, I'd just be upset. But I mean, strangers on the internet, I don't care.
Yeah, because you do, when you're, I mean, I know what your future is and what you're planning for the future, and you want to be there and you want to speak out, but you got to have a thick skin because you are going to get attacked. Not, I don't mean physically. I hope not anyway, certainly. But you will get verbally attacked constantly all the time, and they will try and stop you. They will silence you or try to silence you. That's my white book, which is coming out in September, by the way. Just plug, plug, plug. It's called They Told Me to Shut Up, because that's what they'll do. They'll tell you to shut up. They'll try and silence you. They'll say, you're part of this community. You know, you're not doing a good work for us here. We need to silence you. They'll boycott you. They'll find out something about you. They'll try and discredit you. They'll go back into your past and they'll look at stuff and bring it up and say, oh, you used to do this or you. Are you prepared for that?
Probably not, but like, I mean, we'll see.
I mean, I don't want to be
I
the grim, I'm not trying to be the
I'm not
Grim
one to
Reaper, by
back
the way.
down.
I'm not trying to give you the Grim Reaper. I'm just giving you my experience. That's what they do.
Yeah, but I'm not one to back down over things like that. Because if they're gonna go that, especially if they were to really, really stoop low or like, dox me or try get me fired from work, it definitely will make me shut up. I'd be like, well, I'm not letting yous win now because yous are after pissing me off. So
All right. Well, look,
good luck to them.
it's been a pleasure talking to you. Keep up the good work, by the way. People can follow you. Sean AKO is your Twitter handle if people want to follow you on Twitter. Some really interesting stuff there that not only you put up yourself, but you also retweet other people too. So some really interesting stuff. So please do follow him, Sean AKO. Sean, been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for joining me today. And enjoy the
Thanks very much for
sunshine.
having me.
Enjoy the sunshine.
Cheers.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.